And it makes it seem like there's this big movement or whatever, when really it's just a handful of people who won't stop bitching about something that's their own fucking fault at the end of the day. And the part that was not their fault, the part that did have something to do with how government works, was the provincial government's fault.
Forgotten Corner Podcast would not exist without our listeners. If you enjoy the work we are doing on this show and would like to support further, please consider a donation through our Patreon account, patreon.com/forgottencornerpod, or visit our website, forgottencornerpod.com.
Welcome back to the Forgotten Corner Podcast. We acknowledge that the Forgotten Corner occupies unceded Indigenous land. We acknowledge that the Blackfoot Confederacy never surrendered its land in the signing of Treaty 7, but agreed to share it. The Forgotten Corner sits on Treaty 7 and Treaty 4 territory, traditional lands of the Siksika, Kainai, Piikani, Stoney Nakoda, and Tsuut'ina, as well as the Cree, Sioux, and the Soto bands of the Ojibwa peoples. We also honor and acknowledge that we are on the Métis Nation within Region 3. The Forgotten Corner is a proud member of the Harbinger Media Network, and if you'd like to check out other progressive podcasts from around the country, please click the link that we will provide in our show notes. My name is Scott Schmidt, and I'm here alongside my co-host, Jeremy Appel. Mr. Appel, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing all right. Pretty busy these days, getting really burned out with a bunch of commitments I have and trying to sort of take things slower and focus on things I can control and influence rather than those I cannot. Tried to go to the gym more, doing the few things I can to put a stop to the horrible carnage in Palestine right now, which admittedly isn't a lot, but it's something. My book did all right, I think. I mean, it's still I think the first 3 months of a book's release are like sort of prime time for sales, so we're still in that window about halfway. And I think it's like, I actually don't know how many books have sold until I get my royalty check in May.
Oh shit.
But I sense that
it feels good.
Yeah, like it's on Dundurn, the publisher's website. It's like bestsellers and it's on there.
Yeah.
It's been number one a few times on Amazon's Canadian provincial politics category.
How many books are in that category?
Well, you've got like Steve Paikin's book on Bill Davis.
Gotcha.
There are a few. I mean, it's a very loose category, right? Like it's like algorithmically generated.
It's number one selling book worldwide on Jason Kenney's past.
That's a fact.
That's a fact.
Yeah. And so it's been fine, not much mainstream media attention, which has been frustrating. But again, that's not really something I can control. I think that, I'm really grateful for having a lot of independent media and podcasts, particularly on our network, that have given me a platform to promote the book on. I went on Alberta Primetime, which was awesome. Shout out to Graham Thompson for putting a good word for me.
Nice.
On that. I went on CHED, the global affiliate up here, their afternoon show with Courtney Terrio.
Glant was just on CHED.
Oh, really? Talking about what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, you bet.
Yeah. But anyways, how are you, Scott?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, actually. It's been a long time since we've been together to do an episode, and that's kind of part of what we're here for today. But That's been busy. I think that's kind of like the key here, just sort of right in the smack dab of, 15-year-old kid with extracurriculars, and he's really big into wrestling, and we've been traveling all over the prairies for the last 3 months to all his tournaments and whatnot. And so a lot of that, and we've been like kind of coming out of like a pretty huge transition period at the news, right? Like we had to move, and we, lost people. We were down to, Ryan left, so we had no management in the newsroom, that kind of thing. And
Sweet. That
so,
sounds awesome.
yeah, so we've gotten a couple of new
Parents are on
reporters,
vacation.
got a couple of new reporters on the go right now, and they're both doing great. And one of them, they're both, J school graduates, both have been in the industry for a while. Anna's been working for the company for the last few years, and then Brendan has been like in the business for like 14 years, so he actually knows. He's worked a little bit at Canadian Press, and he worked at CTV in Calgary and at the Herald in Calgary a little bit in his life. So
Oh, shit.
anyways, a lot better as far as like just we have some reporters that definitely know what they're doing, and it's a little easier to get through the days and get things covered right now. So it's been going good. I finally have somebody trained to do my job for when I can't be there. So like I did 7 months, I think, where I made every single newspaper. And
I remember
then
that used to be me.
and
That
then
was your backup.
and then so I, we had a huge like the respiratory shit that was going through everywhere that killed us in December, and I had to like barricade myself because I could not get sick. I could not have an emergency, nothing. We got through that, thankfully, and even got to a place where I got a little bit of time off, some couple of little breaks. I was supposed to go to Mexico, but our friend needed surgery, so we had to cancel. So I just chilled around town and got a break in. So anyways, yeah, I'm doing good. But I think we've both come to a realization in the last little while. I think that that's been a long time coming anyways, but so let's get to it. But we started this podcast right after COVID hit. You and Mo were both quote unquote temporarily laid off from the news at that time, and we had discussed a little bit right here and there, you and I, about starting something up for 4 or 5, 6 months maybe, when we finally decided, hey, if we're we got time, you guys got time for sure, so let's get into this. And it was the right time to do it because there was not, a lot of people didn't have a lot of going on, and so we were able to kind of hit the ground running, and we did at least a year where we did 52 straight episodes, maybe more. And I know the first summer or two we actually were pre-recorded through June so that we'd have episodes to release and whatnot. And then when the pandemic slowed, or however you want to look at how that works, and when just our lives got busy into other things or whatever, it just kind of got away from us a little bit and got harder and harder to keep up. And when you've launched yourselves as like a full Patreon podcast and whatnot, like you owe it to people to keep up with it. Now, we are producer Mo Cranker was good to make sure he was turning that off as much as possible, so we weren't charging
Turning
people
off
or
the money
nothing when,
spigot.
yeah, when we weren't producing. But still, it wasn't what we got into it for, and we were hoping to do more things. So anyways, point is that today we've come together to announce this will be our final Forgotten Corner episode. And it's been a really fun time and a really good journey. I can't believe like we've spoken to so many amazing guests, and there's a good chance we've had the next premier of the province on our podcast. We've definitely been able to touch on a lot of really cool subjects throughout Alberta politics and beyond. And it's been really fun, but all good things come to an end, I guess. And this is kind of where we're at today, is we got other, you've got a lot of avenues in which you're getting this kind of work done. And so here we are.
Yeah, and again, it's been 4 years, which
Yeah.
is crazy when you think about that. That's a lot of, especially when first 2 years we were consistently churning out episodes regularly. It's a lot of guests, and I was just wondering, we do have something we're gonna do. We're gonna do a classic Just Us episode in a moment and talk about something that I think is quite relevant, that I have a lot of questions about. But I wanted to ask you first, Scott, if we could take a trip down memory lane, what interview stands out for you the most that we did, or what episode like is something that you look back on with the most fondness? Because I was reminded of one this past week that I was very proud of. But what's yours?
That's a really good question because there were so many. Like I mean, I guess it depends. Like there were big gets, that were cool. So I mean, like obviously, like hinted at it before, but like when we had Nenshi on, that was cool. We've had Gondek on, that was a nice to have. Jesus, everybody we have is involved in some kind of, we had the bear in Medicine Hat on, that's now in not having the best time. Man, I wish I would have thought about this a little bit more coming in, because they're like, I don't want to say one and then forget. But yeah, I don't know. You tell me yours, and then I'll just
Well, I
agree with it.
actually I was I, I'm but actually when this episode's out, my story on the I don't know if you were following the Palestine motion in the House of Commons, that the NDP and Heather McPherson in particular brought forward, which was very solid, not perfect by any means, but it was a very good motion. Heather gave a fantastic speech, as did Leah Gazan, and other New Democrats, really bringing Palestinian human rights to the forefront of debate in Canada. And then by the end of the day, to get the Liberals to support this motion, they watered it down substantially, and so it passed. But and basically there are a few things in there that passed that are actually pretty big. Arguably, like the fact that the Canadian government has now committed to stopping sending arms to Israel is pretty huge, although they had already kind of done that, and there's been a lot of smoke and mirrors with that. And also committing to supporting holding all parties, including the Israelis, to account for crimes and human rights abuses through international legal fora. Again, there's a lot of language in the final motion that I think the Liberals can sort of weasel out a bit, but it was I mean, it was a big deal, like especially the arms sales thing. I mean, you had Bernie Sanders and Ilhan Omar saying, wow, like Canada can do it, why can't we? And more than 100 UK parliamentarians from all parties, including the Conservatives there, telling David Cameron that we need to stop selling weapons to Israel. So but anyways,
So is this a
for
long drawn out way to say that Heather McPherson sticks out?
yes, I interviewed her for this piece I wrote this past week. I went to her constituency office. She's my MP. And she spoke to me for like an hour, like on the record, about that, and which was incredibly generous of
Generous,
her. And it took me back to when we interviewed her, because I think we did a very good job of striking a balance between being critical while also giving her space to say her piece, and also praising her when it was warranted.
when
And
warranted, yep.
I thought she was very honest in a lot of the responses she gave to us, very refreshingly candid, when we were talking about Ukraine and how she talks about Ukraine versus how she talks about Palestine. I think that inconsistency is still there, but it was refreshing for her to be like, yeah, I mean, we're not perfect, right? We and there are political pressures that result in talking about different things a different way. And so respect to that. Yeah, that stood out to me as I really enjoyed, she doesn't like me anymore, I don't think, but our interview with Sandy Garasino, right. I thought was really good in terms of, you know, just speaking to her about her work. And also, I think I got some good jokes in there.
We managed to do an entire interview without taking the low-hanging fruit of discussing Grimes and Elon.
Yeah, which, I mean, we told her we weren't going to do that, right? Because...
Well, this was part of the reason that, like, you know what I mean? Like, she was generous enough to come on. That's not what she wanted to come on to talk about, so...
Yeah, I mean, it would have been huge was it if we yeah. got her on the record about
well,
that.
Well, for sure, but...
But, she, you know, she, every now and then she'll, like... I don't know if I even follow her on Twitter anymore, because we... Anyways, I don't think I'm in her good books anymore. But actually, in my book, I say very lovely things about her, because she did a great job debunking the whole foreign-funded environmentalist nonsense. And so that also stands out to me as a highlight. And I mean, we could go on and on. Shin Phillips, I mean, it was really great of her.
That
to
was the original, the OG
first guest, yep. when we had no clue what we were doing.
Yeah.
And
it was like half her, like, I don't want to say it was her idea, but it was pretty much,
she was
like,
very supportive.
It was just like, yep, I'm coming on. And I'm like, let's do it then.
So and actually, cool. Shannon came to my book event in Lethbridge.
Oh, really? Which so I was going to say, there's another one that probably likes us less than they did in the beginning, but...
Yeah, I don't know. I like Shannon Law as a person. Again, I didn't know her when she was...
I mean, we came onto the scene as, like... like, I don't know, lacks of better terms or whatever, but in a lot, like, as heroes to the NDP in a way. Like, when we burst onto the scene, we were... this like misfit outfit of, like, you know, like,
yeah,
going after the conservative government has never been seen before here. And, you know, a lot of the NDP even looked at that as like, ooh, they're on our side. I was like, well,
yeah,
it's not the best way
depends.
To put that.
Like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I certainly don't agree with Shannon on her choice for leadership candidate. I think Ganley would be awful. And if we're talking about, like, right, this centrist drift of the NDP that we've both been,
well, it does,
of,
it's going to be,
it's happening already.
It's going to be Nedgy, and at least in the, like, if there's a silver lining here, like you and I are in the minority for what kind of government Albertans, yeah. want, right? And all I'm saying is, like, the people, like the typical quote unquote Alberta conservative that I first got to know when I moved here in the 90s was like Anahid Nenshi is like, they should be building statues of this guy. Like, they're fucking going to be, you know what I mean? Like, he is the progressive conservative in my eyes, right? The purple, right? So I'm just saying, like, while you and I, and many other Albertans, obviously listeners of the show, would like to see, like, an actual left-wing party or someone with the left being represented, Nenshi's probably going to actually beat Smith, and part of it's going to be because, yeah. he actually, like, he'll give Albertans the kind of conservative-type government that they actually want. I don't think that that's enough to make everything better, you know what I mean? But, like, it's a lot better than, yeah. to me, than watching people try to pretend that, like, Kenny and then now Smith are, like, their kind of, oh, like, the best premier since Lougheed or whatever. It's like, there's, you know, at least Nenshi, like, fits that. He just happens to be running for the NDP. So, but anyway, yeah, that's off topic, but I think,
yeah,
that's how that's going to play out. It's our last episode.
Yeah, and we haven't talked about leadership race at all. So I do think it's worth, obviously, I would like Sarah Hoffman to be the leader. I think she has the best platform thus far. It's interesting.
The public has spoken on carbon tax, let's get rid of it stuff, though.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't understand. There is a left-wing critique of carbon taxation as a market-based solution to a problem created by the market, and that direct regulation is an better alternative to that. But I certainly that wasn't what Pancholi and Ganley are offering, or Nenshi. Hoffman, it's unclear, but it is interesting that she is running as the left candidate, even though she was so close to Notley and presided over this centrist rift. So I mean, look, I'm not joining the NDP to vote. I think that Nenshi is the one who can actually bring the NDP across the finish line. And ultimately,
yes, for sure he is. Because there's they only need all they need is Calgary, right? And
yeah,
anyways,
but that's also like that is a problem. If you only win Calgary and Edmonton, but the rest of Alberta votes for the UCP with like vast majorities,
yeah,
I mean that's an issue that needs to be addressed. But we're at a point now where it's like,
by 2027 or whatever it is, it's even possible that the rural support will be what it is. Like, it doesn't mean that they won't still be a 50% plus one support type thing or whatever, but I don't see it growing. Like, she's not, I mean, there's a lot of really bad shit that's coming Alberta's way in the next few years. Like, a lot.
And unpopular shit, too.
Oh, it's going to be just disastrous. Brutal. And
this Alberta police force that isn't going to replace the RCMP.
Oh, it's so fucked up, man.
Augment them, for sure. We need more police forces.
That's the problem. Yeah.
But anyways.
All right. Let's talk about the thing you came here to talk about today. We actually have a current event.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you about this, Scott, because you are in Medicine Hat, and I've just been, reading the reporting about how Forgotten Corner guest Lindsay Clark has been having a very rough ride, and I didn't realize the extent to which it was. So council has voted to strip her of essentially all her powers and cut her pay in half. Like, what did she smoke crack or something?
No. So yeah. So the end result is that she was found to have broken the code of conduct during an exchange last August with the city manager, fairly new city manager at that time, and those not around a Medicine Hat, that it had been a bit of a revolving door of city managers. We'd had repeats and people coming, and anyways, there'd have been a lot of issue of transparency and all of these things coming out of City Hall, and a lot of what the new council was sort of voted in for was to kind of deal with some of this stuff. Anyway, so this is the new city manager, and Mayor Clark and her got into an exchange. You could call it heated. It was more like it was a bit of an interrogation. But there's a definite, obviously, like there's two different ways people are viewing that conversation, right? Like, as in the mayor was out of line and the mayor was in the right. Anyway, so she was deemed to be obviously like way out of line during this time. It was, a lot of talk about whether it should have been a closed session conversation, that kind of thing. It was done in public council. And so, yeah, she's the sanctions that came against her are sweeping, to say the least. Obviously, goes from $144,000 a year to $77,000 a year immediately. But aside from that, she's basically been reduced to a vote in the chair, in council chamber. She's not to chair any meetings. She's been moved to the end. So she's not responsible for chairing anything. She's not no committees, nothing of that. She can't talk to staff at the city hall. Like, she can't go to a common area even. Like, she's allowed to go to her office and leave. She's not allowed to communicate with city staff. She can't communicate with the city manager unless it's through email, and every email has to CC every other council and counselor. And she's allowed to talk to staff during council meetings, but she's not allowed to basically do anything else. Like, it's pretty sweeping, obviously. So she's was floored by that, and it's created this insane thing. Now, what's really quite fascinating, I guess, about the whole thing, or where we're at, is that, like, public opinion is, like, heavily, heavily skewed in her favor right now. So, like, 70 to 80% of, like, the feedback that comes into the news is supportive of Clark and completely denouncing this council. Now, there are some that are coming in as support of that, but when you look at it from the outside, and we, you know, as much information as we've given, all, it's so much redacted information and all these things, there's only, like, all we have is this 12-minute exchange that was, like, okay, heated, I guess, but something's obviously gone on behind scenes, closed doors, whatever, that we don't for sure know about, right? And
yeah,
all seven counselors outside of, so the mayor and the counselor Shyla Sharps, who filed the complaint against her, were obviously removed from the decision-making process, but the other seven counselors voted 7-0 to lay down these sanctions on Mayor Clark, right? And so, you know, some of those counselors were pretty close to Mayor Clark coming in. Counselor Van Dyke, for one, I believe they had a good relationship, right? So again,
yeah, I was surprised by that too, Allison, yeah, because she's like, she's one of us, right? Like,
yeah,
like, I, and that, to me, what, and we'll, I think, get into this more, what, because it is incredibly fishy, and we know that the UCP is really using its strong arm on municipalities, right? I mean, they're going to introduce political parties in municipalities soon. And so I think my immediate impulse was to see this as somehow part of that. But then you have Allison Van Dyke voting in favor of it, who,
yeah, I don't know that
would
this
be,
yeah,
part of this, right? Because there was a recall petition against Lindsay.
There,
right?
Was, and it failed miserably, and they,
right,
would,
but
never,
that's not the point.
No, no, but they never officially, they never officially even released what they were able to get, because it was nothing. But anyway, this is sort of what's so crazy. So the people that are behind, the people that were behind the recall petition are among those supporting Clark right now.
Okay.
So it's hard to know what the hell is going on. But, like, essentially, a lot of what the recall people, like, their big issue was utilities, but the underlying thing was they were saying that the city was being secretive, kind of thing, right? Like, you're hiding stuff from us. And Clark's entire mandate or whatever in this particular rift that she's in with council is that she was fighting for transparency, right? She's been fighting for that, right? And following the rules and not doing things a certain way just because, quote, that's how it's always been done or whatever, right? So that's what's really been hilarious, is just, like, watching people try to, like, twist themselves around to pick the side here. And the thing is that, like, I think it should be said off the bat that, like, it should be, anyone that's actually followed this should be very hesitant to pick a side here. We should be, like, we just don't know exactly what's going on. I know that in my life, when seven people agree with something about one person, those seven people tend to have a point that they're like, there's, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire or whatever, you know? But I also, you know, I can see a lot of this from Mayor Clark's side too, right? She's a lawyer coming in, city solicitor. She gets all the rules. She knows the bylaws. She's gotten into a lot of these arguments from her point of view because she's fighting to make sure those procedures are followed and stuff like that. And she's obviously rubbed people the wrong way. And she pissed off staff. She pissed off administration. She pissed off counselors throughout the first couple years of their term. But was she pissing people off for the right reasons or the wrong reasons? And do we even really know? I've met her obviously a few times. We've had her on the podcast. I think she's a really lovely person, and I enjoyed all the times that we've spoken. But again, like, we just don't have enough information on exactly where this went off the rails and exactly what council's impression is of what she was doing during this time. But they were aware that they were going to take backlash for doing this. I'm not sure that they were aware quite the level of support that would be for the mayor, because I mean, they're just getting destroyed in the public conversation for the most part.
Yeah, because what struck me was just how extreme these sanctions were. And I mean,
so extreme.
I remember when that exchange happened with the city manager, and she was denounced by her fellow counselors for being totally out of line. And I can see how that would be seen as unbecoming of a mayor. But again, I don't think the punishment fits the crime, which to me suggests there's a lot more going on behind the scenes. And now there is a report about it, right? That was released, yes, in redacted, yeah, form. Tell me a bit about that.
Yeah, okay. So they had they hired a third-party investigator from a law firm. You go to Edmonton or Calgary, I can't remember right now. Kingsgate or something like that it's called. Anyways, the process, you know, he went through the process, or I believe it's a he that did it. It doesn't matter, but they went through the process of, you know, doing interviews and all these things. And long story short, this really long report comes out, 40 pages, and there's very little information that we didn't already know in it. The only like sort of bit of juicy information that was able to be gotten from it, what's this information, was that there Lindsay wasn't, or Miss Clark wasn't responding to a specific request to sign something so she kept delaying something, and there was this back and forth exchange for like months, and eventually Clark just never signed this thing. So there was like, I wonder why she's doing that, but she's a lawyer, so it's a legal play. Like that's all it is, right? But the investigator found that she did, and the wording is like, you know, severely injure the city manager's reputation, basically, right? Like that, like she had essentially broken code of conduct and, for lack of a better term, defamed this woman in front of other people. So that was found to be a viable complaint. And then the other bit of the complaint was that Clark had obtained a legal opinion going into that August exchange about, it was all over like reorganization of like committees and whatnot, and like who would be in charge of what. And the city manager had put all these things through in reverse order of how the bylaw had said or whatever, right? It was like she had made a mistake and had admitted to it, but the entire council, but Clark, was like, nah, it's fine, let's just do it. And Clark was like, no, we're not, that's not right. So that's where, so she had gotten this legal opinion coming into that meeting, and it was found to be unsubstantiated that she was wrong to do that. Essentially, they were saying that she had broken code of conduct by seeking her own personal legal opinion, but she paid for it herself. She, you know what I mean? So unsubstantiated, but yeah. So for what on the very surface appears to be very, very heavy sanctions on a mayor who had one somewhat heated 12-minute exchange in a council meeting, that's what the surface sounds like. Well, that sounds over the top, doesn't it? You're like, well, what the fuck, right? So logically speaking, you have to assume that there is so much more to the story that we don't know. I know Clark and Sharps are probably, like, they're both kind of gearing up for a legal battle. So what all comes out in the future, I don't know, but it's bizarre because, like, everyone's left to make their own opinion, and you know how everyone works. They do. So it's just a bombardment of people thinking they know what happened who just fucking don't. None of us do. But I do know that it's a massive distraction from things that are important. I do know that it's the only thing that's being talked about in a city that is also going to be dealing with a drought this year. You know, so bigger fish to fry in a world, and here we are. This is kind of, I think, the overlying thing for me lately of why I'm just starting to, I don't want to say like I feel like giving up, but I'm just like, just watch us ignore so many big things to have these fucking stupid high school type things go on. And I don't know. I find it disheartening, and it's medicine hats and like national news for what has to be a dumb reason at the end of the day, yeah. Even though we don't know for sure. So
yeah. I just remember when Lindsay Clark was elected and this new council was elected, there was a lot. I thought it was a big deal to me, seeing, having lived in Medicine Hat under, you know, Ted Clugston's reign, under a council that I think was all male except for one person. Seeing Clark, who is, you know, certainly more progressive than Ted Clugston was.
That was certainly the impression that everybody had.
Defeat him resoundingly, have Alison Van Dyke, who again we know and has, I think, similar politics to ours, elected, having the majority of council is female, right?
Yeah, it's two men, seven women.
Dumanowski and McGrogan, who's now the acting
mayor. There's three men. There's Councillor Hirsch as well. Darren Hirsch is also. So there's McGrogan.
Right. Hirsch has been around a while too. Right?
Yeah. So six and three. But yeah. When it happened, it did have that, you know, we all kind of, but you know, this is kind of what is sad about the whole thing is that, like, I don't think we all saw infighting to be their demise, you know? And I think that maybe it's early enough because there's still, what, another year or two before the next year and a half or whatever before the next municipal election. So maybe there's some time for some people to earn their votes back or whatever. But I think if there was an election today, not very many would be returning, right? And I'm not sure even all of them would run. So it's sad because, like, again, we're on a municipal level and on a provincial level and somewhat on a federal level, really, like, we're just not focused on the right things. And it's disheartening with all that is coming. Like, I still, you know, like, still can't believe how much people like whine and snivel about like spending and debt and shit like that. And it's like, have you not read any of, have you not like looked at all of the like incoming next 10, 15 years of future? Like, we're spending money, man. Like, like, what are we going to do? Just watch the province burn down while we can't afford to put it out? Like, no, we're like, we, we have such disastrous consequential things coming our way as a province, as a country, as a world, that what we do focus on is petty and annoying, and it really just doesn't accomplish anything. And if there's one thing that I can say about this council, is that they just don't, they're not giving the impression that they get a lot done. And it was one thing for the council. It was one thing for a year, 6 months to a year, when they were all new and kind of getting their bearings and whatnot. But it has been a complaint that it's, and it's just, it's hard to ignore. So it took them months to be able to pass a trap, neuter, and release program for feral cats. It's just like they can't, you know, it's not, that part's just not, it's not good. So, but we'll see what happens, how it goes. Like, there's a lot of shit going on in municipal politics all around. And I think we want to talk a little bit about that too, right? Because there's a recall petition going on in Calgary, and there's a mismanagement, quote unquote, going on in Edmonton. And,
and anyway, I think so Chestermere is really the model, because again, Take Back Alberta and allies are mobilizing in advance of the municipal elections next year. Their focus is largely on school boards, but again, you see, like in Cochrane, for example, there's this small business owner who threw a fit because he couldn't get his way with the local government. So he circulated this petition calling for the province to investigate them. And it was reported in media as this just total, this, you know, hard done by small business owner who wants transparency and accountability. Meanwhile, he's bringing David Parker and Craig Chandler, this conservative operative in Calgary, to town. And he's saying, I want them to do what they did to Chestermere, which is dismiss councillors who weren't playing ball, and administrators. And Parker's saying, yeah, the whole council needs to be removed because they're all corrupt. And at the same time, you have this recall petition in Calgary, which is a similar thing, where it's one guy, it is presented as being this one guy who's just, you know, taxes are too high and he's upset with dysfunction at City Hall. But then meanwhile, you find out that Take Back Alberta and its like-minded friends are playing a key role in circulating this petition against Gondek. And again, it's not going to meet the threshold, because the threshold, as introduced by Kenny, was designed to be unreasonably high. But that's not the game they're playing. They're not trying to get Jerry Gondek recalled. They're trying to first of all, demoralize her. But I think more importantly is they're building a list of people who are supportive of this right-wing municipal agenda mobilize for a new political party once Smith introduces municipal parties.
It's a way to fudge discontent too, right? Because like, first of all, like, let's go back to Medicine Hat's recall just really quick, because this was all over a utility issue. And well, I'll give them the olive branch that the initial measures offered by the city in June weren't really universal, and they were just sort of targeting sort of like more vulnerable citizens and not giving a break to everyone and blah, 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 blah. But the truth of the matter is that everything that people were upset about, and this is what I find to be just a massive fucking problem in our society as a whole, every single person that was mad had just not paid enough attention to be aware of what was coming.
like the, Colin and I sat down and found 26 stories between January and June that we had written explaining how utilities and the pricing works and the fixed rates versus the default rate and whatnot. And so the people who were really, really mad, business owners and whatnot that came out and formed those groups in July, they were on the default rate, and they had literally just didn't know that they're at that time, like they didn't even know of a fixed rate, right? And so their initial complaint was, well, there only should have been one rate, as opposed to like any fucking remote amount of like self-awareness that like, oh, I had 6 months to like know the difference between the two, and now I'm being burned by not choosing the better of the two. Okay. Anyway, but a lot of it was like, when they start this recall petition, it makes people think that there's all these people that like are hating on this one person or whatever. And like, they can tell you, oh, we've got like 8,000 signatures that we're never going to release or get vetted, like, or any of these things. And it makes it seem like there's this big movement or whatever, when really it's just a handful of people who won't stop bitching about something that's their own fucking fault at the end of the day. And the part that was not their fault, the part that did have something to do with how government works, was the provincial government's fault. Like the fact that like we were trying to hang a fucking city council over the price of power, when they were literally using the same formula that had been used for 20 years, the province skyrocketed in rates, right? Like, but no one ever wants to point the finger at the right place. So anyways, they all hate on the council for the wrong reasons. And that's why I say like the people that started the recall are now on our side, and because they don't fucking really know which way is up some of these, you know, the way these things work. And I just think that like, it, you know, in like, what was the Flames game the other day where Gondek got booed and dropping the puck or whatever. I just think it's like these recall petitions can make it seem like there's a way bigger. And then people are like, oh my God, they're recalling her. Yeah. I hate her too. You know? And it just like, I don't know. Yeah. So when they first had the recall come out, I wrote about it and I was like, you have to have it. You can't have it easy, because then everyone's going to file them. But if you make it hard, they're just going to use them for point scoring, right? Which is what they're doing. So anyways, no big deal. I predicted exactly what they're doing, but
And then in Edmonton, I think it's also interesting with what's going on there, because now Smith is threatening to investigate City of Edmonton Council. It's unclear exactly for what, if they don't get their act together. There's also been, with regards to, you know, homelessness and social disorder downtown, Smith created this task force for which she plucked two city councilors, Tim Cartmell and Sarah Hamilton, mm-hmm. who are quite clearly conservative.
Clearly,
I mean, yep. Sarah Hamilton, I broke a story
thought
a couple of weeks ago. Yeah.
Yep.
Literally ditched council to speak at a UCP fundraiser for mm-hmm. International Women's Day, where she was advertised specifically as a city councilor, which is a no-no.
No-no.
Yep. Yeah. But she plucked them to sit on this task force on downtown public safety without even notifying council or the mayor. She just went over their heads. So while, again, we don't know what's going on in Medicine Hat, really. It doesn't seem like that is a manifestation of this UCP fuckery in municipal politics. There is a pattern here.
I hear the province could just pay their property taxes.
In Edmonton, yeah, that would
and top up the municipal infrastructure grants and shit like that. Like the right, I mean, this is the thing we've been saying this for years now, right? Like the entire, this is what Kenny was gonna do. Like this is what it was since he came in. Like we're just going to download costs off the province onto municipalities. That'll make our books look great, and people will rail against the municipalities for sucking it.
Yeah, and it's, and then blame it's, them. And now,
and it's so annoying how easily people fall for that shit. That's what's really annoying about it all is like, I don't even begrudge the people who were mad about the utility rates or whatever. It's just like, if you're going to get so fucking mad at something that you're going to form groups and organize and do all this shit, if you don't even know who the fuck you're supposed to be mad at, I'm not going to respect you. Like they just, and this is the thing, but this is Kenny knew to prey on that ignorance that people would have. They don't look beyond the end of their nose. And so they just, yeah. So cities are struggling. Well, you fucked us up. You know, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. But
yeah,
it's where we are.
Politics, man.
And the government classic that caused the problems is going to step in to fix them.
And just do what created the problems on a municipal level, right?
Right.
And
right.
It's
download costs off of municipalities onto residents.
Yeah. And then by putting in these conservative functionaries,
mm-hmm.
they're just going to cut all these city services to keep property taxes low, and then everyone's on their own, right? And I think that is the end game of the UCP here. And at best, you could say what's happening at Medicine Hat City Council plays into that narrative that municipalities
100%
are totally dysfunctional, yep. And we need the strong arm of the province to come in and fix everything.
Correct.
And so that is a very concerning development, one that I am going to be keeping a close eye on as a former Calgary City Hall reporter, too, because that is especially, I think, dangerous, because you won't even have a level of government that can just lightly push back against the province, as we saw during the Kenny years. Because they'll just be taken out and called dysfunctional. And with political parties getting introduced, I mean, that's going to make it a lot easier for the UCP's allies to mobilize around a particular agenda. And I think there's a debate to be had over partisanship in civic politics, because my inclination is, well, it's already there, right? We know which parties roughly city councillors are.
Yes, I think the obviousness of someone's politics diminishes the smaller the community gets. So yeah, I think it's really easy in Calgary and Edmonton, especially in the ward races and whatnot, to sort of have it be pretty easily distinguishable if they're a conservative, progressive, or whatever. Whereas it's a little bit less obvious in a place like Medicine Hat, you know, we think we know who was, right? But I mean, there's a mixture.
Yeah, it's
in
also
that, right?
Like, you need to get votes across the city, right? It's not right. Like you're advocating
you're
interests of
correct.
A particular right. ward that you know votes a certain way provincially right. and federally. So that aspect.
By not having the politics in it, it does allow for some of the talking point conversations to just be omitted, which I do like, right? Like I like that we don't just spend our time saying like, well, I'll do better job spending or not spending than that person. And it's just the whole thing is that, right? Like there's a little less of that, but there is a lot of like, oh, I'm going to be the one that grows the city. Like everyone just says the same thing. And you know, you just go with, I don't know. I think there are good things. Like, I can honestly say I believe that there would be some good to having an idea going in what someone's politics are. Because I personally would like to know, you know?
Yeah.
But I also see why overall it would be a net negative, because I see the way party politics works.
And I also don't think that is the issue at hand here. That's how it's being presented. But really, the issue is the UCP attempting to impose its will on municipalities. And this is one tool towards the end of doing that. So, I mean, look, Vancouver has municipal parties, Montreal does, and, you know, people vote for whoever they want as they do in another election. But that doesn't have the added context of a provincial government that is looking
right. And I also dominate
municipalities.
Well, and this is the thing, like, I also like the way it's being wanted to be set up here, it would be like part of, like, you'd never see progressives again, in the sense that, like, all you'd have to do on the on a municipal level, if you're running, say, like, if you want our city to be able to work with our conservative government, you better vote for me, kind of thing. Because, like, it would be absolutely a fear that the province would pick and choose winners based on party affiliations at the municipal level. I think we can agree with that on that wholeheartedly. Right. That would be a way of, you know, it would be used as a tactic. That's just another reason why it would be a bad idea. Right. And anyway, anything that the UCP suggests is something to be a skeptic of right off the bat. But the more you look into that, you know, it's just about them being in control of everything while also not being responsible for anything, which is impressive to say the least, actually. Like, everything seems to be someone else's fault, right? But that's why we need to be in charge of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's brutal.
Yeah, it's very dangerous, especially when you look at all these other aspects of what the UCP is trying to do. Right, both
I'm trying to
distance us from the federal government and also imposing its will on municipalities. Like, that's not a good sign. And no. I don't want to be hyperbolic and say, oh, this is going to be the end of democracy as we know it, but it is a step in that direction.
Well, but democracy is under threat in the United States right now, and we usually don't take a whole long to catch up to them. Like, mm-hmm. a couple of years, we tend to be behind them in how our politics work, right? Like, they decided that trans people needed to be erased, so then we decided, like, that, you know. But yeah, it's I don't want to be a Debbie Downer either, but at the same time, like, it's our last episode, and I don't need to sugarcoat nothing but I really do think that with the overwhelming crises that are at our feet right now, the person in charge will damage Alberta in a way that can't be repaired. And I believe that. Like, I don't believe we can actually recover from the decisions that will be made in the next 3-4 years. And it's not just because they have a shitty ideology that doesn't give a fuck about you. It's that they're going to implement that during the most important crisis riddled time of maybe modern history.
Yeah. And then she isn't going to save us from that. Right. And that I think,
no, he'll just be nicer on a social level, which is great. Well,
yeah, and I think
I'd like to stop kicking trans people. Like, that would be nice.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think, like, when Rachel Notley was in power, the NDP will slow down this decline, but they're not going to. I doubt that they're going to have the ambition and the will to actually make transformative changes in the opposite direction, which is what's
necessary. No, it's going to take young people, because it's young people that are starting to figure out that capitalism is the problem here, and that capitalism is in its late stages before this is what it looks like before it turns to fascism to save itself, or while it's beginning to turn to fascism to save itself. And you know, a lot of the people like Nenshi or my age group and older than me, we grew up as capitalism was peaking. You know, it was building pretty high, pretty fast in as the 80s took off, you know. And I watched it go all the way up, and it's just like it's now coming down, and it'll probably destroy itself faster than we thought. So anyway, good luck, Alberta. Yeah. All right, let's get out of here. Last time.
Sad. Yeah, I just want to thank everyone who listened to the podcast, and especially those who contribute to it as patrons, whether you did for the entire run of our show or at a certain period. It meant a lot to us to have people support our work and engage with it. Thank you to everyone
and encourage us, which was really huge. The amount, yeah. The number of people that were just so encouraging. So yeah,
and everyone who appeared on our show, you didn't have to do that, and you did. So I am very grateful for that. And I mean, Scott and I we're going to keep doing what we're doing just without this podcast. If you're in Medicine Hat and listening, I will be coming down this summer, I promise you, for a book event. I want to do my final book event in Medicine Hat, because I think for me, that is like very symbolic in
sure.
things coming.
Absolutely.
So mm-hmm. I will be in Medicine Hat this awesome. Summer. I promise. I'm also going to be hopefully going up to Grand Prairie and Fort Mac. Hopefully they're not on fire when I do. And I'll probably be back in Calgary in between the north and south to do some nice. More stuff.
Nice. Yeah, I would reiterate the same. Just thank you to everybody. It's been an amazing ride. To our current top patrons, Farish Audrey, Chris Durwell, Dave Bonmiller, Darius Beauregard, you guys stuck through for the long haul. A couple of you are like OG patrons, so really appreciate that. To those Ray, Big Red Machine, who was a big supporter for so long, and Nicola Di Nicola, she was a big supporter for so long. Roberta Lexier, who not only supported the show but was a huge influential guest and co-host at times with us, and couldn't have done it without your expertise. To the late Susan Lexier, who was a huge supporter of the show. Miss you a lot.
And to Mo Cranker.
That, oh, like, fuck, you know, like more than anything.
Last but certainly not
more least, than Mo. Anything.
Thank you for your like diligence.
Yeah.
In
not a single episode runs without you. So
yeah, in listening to every episode, even if you really don't want to, and making it sound crisp and coherent. Mo is like he's the wizard. Of the Forgotten Corner. So
love that guy.
Yeah, love you, Mo. Can't wait to see you when I'm in Medicine Hat this summer. That's a promise.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Also thank you to the Harbinger Media.
Yes,
Network.
Andre Goulet.
Andre Goulet, who's just a king, and he's been so awesome to us throughout the whole time.
Yeah, and just so inclusive. I remember just like he's if you're like a progressive and you have a podcast, he wants you to be part of this community. And I think that's really important too, when we're challenging.
He treated us like he did some of the biggest ones out there. Right. So that was very cool. We never felt small time, even though we were compared to a number of the ones that are on the network. So we were always treated with just respect and, appreciation and professionalism. He was great to work with, so we're gonna miss you too, but don't be a stranger, Andre. You still have my number, so don't be a stranger. But yeah, I don't know if we've missed anyone else, but I guess
thank you to you for doing this with me for so long. It was awesome.
You too, Scott. I'm really glad we continued doing this as long as we did, even after I moved out of the Forgotten Corner.
Yeah, you kept getting further away from me, but I wouldn't let you go. So no, that was awesome. Yeah, I'm gonna miss it for sure. It's funny, you just like, yeah, now I'm all like, let's never end, but we kind of have to. But
and who knows? I mean, maybe we'll do a reunion at some point. It's not out of the question.
We'd have to borrow someone's. We'd have to get someone to upload it for us, because we're a couple of weeks away from no longer being able to actually physically upload an episode.
Right.
It's not free. It's not free, right? So that's why we had to make this decision, because all of our yearly, like, we started the show in April, right? So all of our yearly expenses were due like right now. So we had to it was either do another year of hoping we can get an episode here and there, or make the hard call. So we did that.
But anyways, my point is, forever is a long time. Never say never.
100%.
And I guess just everyone, my parting word is stay safe out there. It's a rough world we live in, and I hope we helped you at times get through it.
If at the very least, you know that you weren't alone in viewing this hellscape as something we need to fix anyway. All right, my friend. Love you. This was great.
Yeah. Talk soon.
Appreciate you.
Not on the podcast.
Yeah. Talk soon.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.